Of the four Gospels, it is debatable which one's more Jewish. Up until recently, the conventional wisdom was that it was Matthew that was the most Jewish. But most, especially in recent decades, John is making a pretty heavy case for being a more distinctively Jewish gospel. And you can see it in the way that he describes things and talks about things. He has a very intimate knowledge of the Jewish culture and life. And if you listen closely during the proclamation of the Passion narrative, according to John, the beloved disciple is on personal terms with Annas and the high priest. He's known to them on a personal level, because the supposition might even be that the beloved disciple, John, might actually have been of a priestly family, and that his family of fishermen also had part-time, because you don't always be priests, they would have part-time jobs being fishermen and then as well as being priests from time to time. So they had this. He had this intimate knowledge of the temple system, the worship system of the people of Israel, and how it all worked. But what's also interesting is that he, having all of this intimate knowledge, there's one feast that John doesn't talk about. It's Pentecost. It's a Jewish feast. But it's a late developing Jewish feast. It was one of the ones that was not quite in full bloom by the time of Jesus' death and resurrection, because it wouldn't have had like the same staying power that, say, Passover would have had. Passover predates the temple. They had the Feast of Booths, which was around the temple. But Pentecost was more recent, and it was a harvest festival that happened roughly 50 days after the Passover. And what it was a harvest festival that the Jewish people began to say, Passover, 50 days, the giving of the law. Our liberation from slavery, a few days of initial wandering. We get away from the Egyptians, and then Moses goes up the mountain for 40 days, and then he comes down and he gives us the law. Oh! And it's not like an immediate thing. We have this from secondary sources from the Jewish people. And so gradually you can see this is not like a hard and fast thing. They don't have institutionalized academic life like we do. So it's much more of an organic process that this feast develops. But then you have Luke, who is not Jewish, but he's well educated, very, very well educated. And he would have been, as the tradition goes, instructed by the Apostle Paul, which is where he gets his primary sources. And every now and again, you hear in the Acts of the Apostles, Luke speaks in the first person plural in his relationship with the Apostle Paul. And we went to blah, 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 blah. That the primary source for the Luke-Acts book, the one book, is the Apostle Paul's proclamation. And what Paul is constantly talking about is grace overcoming the law. How grace overcomes the law. That now that Christ has risen from the dead, the old ceremonial law has passed away. And now we live under the divine law of the Spirit. And here you get, in today's first reading, a beautifully laid out theology of this, hidden in a narrative. If you read the Old Testament, the Pentateuch, about how God gives the law to the people, Moses goes up to the top of the mountain, and then when he comes back, obviously there's that whole story about like the golden calf, etc. But there's also this moment when God says to them, this is, through Moses, this is the law which you will follow. And then the people of Israel say, everything you have told us to do, we will do. And then the blood is sprinkled on the people, and then they become covenanted into God as they receive the law. Well, the old sacrifices have now passed away. And the blood that is sprinkled on us is the blood of the Passover lamb, that is Jesus Christ. And the law that we receive is the Spirit of God. For the law for the people of Israel is how they live intimately with God. It wasn't an attempt to have all of these nice rules so that they know what to do in what given circumstances. That's more of an Islamic interpretation of the law. Islam, it's not about having God's heart, it's about just doing what God says. For the people of Israel, you need to have God's heart. And on this day, that now becomes truly possible. For as Paul will say, the purpose of the law was to teach the people of Israel that you can't have God's heart on your own, that you need help. And that now that Christ has gone to the Father, he is now giving us a new life and a new intimacy with God that the previous experience teaches us is necessary. That fulfilling a bunch of obligations doesn't bring us that divine intimacy. It is what God has done in Jesus. And so in the case of Mary Magdalene, what you have is, again, something that is patterned in the entire Christian life, the same in a brand new way. To be Christian is to be... This sounds really dumb, but I can't think of a better word, and I got to get on with it. It's like being a meta-Jew. You can't leave behind the Old Testament and be a Christian. That was one of the first heresies that the Christian church had to deal with. You can't be anti-Semitic and be a Christian, because your love for Jesus and Mary must be pretty small. You can't reject all of that past, but it now has a new context. The setting, the plot, is not this world, but God's plan for us. Mary had a hard time recognizing her teacher, and when she finally saw him, she said, Rabuni. And it shows that although she has this new encounter, she still almost wants to bring him back to where he was. And Jesus says, don't hold on to me. Don't keep me where I was before. You have to follow me in this new place. Go and tell my brothers. Go and tell them that I have risen. And come back. And it's when she gathers together these guys that a new Pentecost in John begins. He breathes on them. Receive the Holy Spirit. Those whose sins that you forgive are forgiven. And those whose sins you retain are retained. The great joy of being in the church is that the power of God is living and active. The Jewish people knew from their experience of the law that only God can forgive sins. Only God can truly feed the people of Israel. Only God can be the source and sustenance of everything that is human. And now the church, with her characteristic audacity, is doing the exact things that only God can do, but not by our power, but by the power of the Spirit who dwells within us.